Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is Evan Davis. Evan Davis is senior counsel, Cleary Gottlieb, former counsel to Governor Mario Cuomo, president of the Association of the Bar of the City of New York, and vice chair of Columbia University Board. However, Evan Davis joins us today to talk about his current role as the manager of the Committee to Reform the State Constitution. The Committee to Reform the State Constitution is a body composed of civic leaders from across New York State. Welcome, Evan Davis.
Well, it's good to be here, Alan. It's been a long time since we talked, and it's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, last time I saw you was in the lobby of a movie theater.
That's right, just like a Woody Allen movie.
That's right. Okay, so what is this committee? Who's on it? What do you want, and what impact, if any, can it have? You guys had a terrible loss when you went to the people of New York and said, let's have a constitutional convention to clear out this graveyard of a constitution with all those words in it.
We did try, and the committee was originally set up to convince people to have a convention. And it ran into the whole big, massive $4.5 million spending effort by the unions to defeat the convention. And there was an effort to scare people that dark money would take over the convention, and it was a time when you couldn't totally say that's a ridiculous thought, because we live in a time when the system is rigged and corrupt and in favor of big money. So the public was not willing to take that chance. But we see such an important agenda for reform of the Constitution. Our Constitution is way out of date, and even worse, it contains provisions that are positively harmful to the people. So we are going to continue the effort. And we've got, you know, academics, and we've got people who used to be in government. There are a lot of my friends who worked for Mario Cuomo who are on the committee, like Hank DeLay and Jerry Crotty, you know, names you know well, Alan.
Yeah.
Stan Lundin. And we are going to continue the effort. We're going to do it what I think is the much harder way of getting the legislature to pass things. And we figure we can't get the legislature to do anything unless we can bring the pressure of the voters to bear. So we've registered as a political expenditure committee that can spend money to urge the voters, and in our case, particularly to urge the voters not to support people who are standing in the way of needed reform. And in terms of the upcoming election in November, we're focusing on two main issues. One is voting. Article 2 of the state constitution, which is a suffrage article, is from a totally different time and a totally different world. It actually makes it hard to vote. And it embeds in the Constitution the system of a board of elections run by the two political parties, which has proved to be a disaster. And the voting, making it easier to vote, we all know the main ways: early voting, having the right to vote by mail, not because you're physically unable to get to the polls, but because it's more convenient for you. The weather's bad, your kid is sick, easier to get to the polls to vote absentee, and change this ridiculous thing where you cannot register vote unless you've registered a good period before the convention. And if you want to vote in a primary of a party that you haven't joined, you have to join the primary 11 months before the election. So that's the voting agenda. The other big agenda is corruption. The culture of corruption and play to play that exists in Albany. And if anything, because there are other groups that are working on voting, we are particularly focusing on corruption. and we have put together a constitutional amendment that would place in the Constitution effective enforcement machinery for ethics rules and strengthen those ethics rules and then have machinery to enforce them. Because right now we have machinery that is frankly ridiculous. We have the Joint Commission on Public Ethics and the Legislative Ethics Commission that divide this responsibility, and they are politically controlled. They are not independent. They are not taken seriously. The initials for the Joint Commission on Public Ethics are J-COPE.
Or J-JOKE, as we say.
Some people exactly call them J-JOKE. It is an embarrassment that this enforcement mechanism is so weak. Believe it or not, two of the 14 members of the commission, two of the governor's appointees, in fact, the governor wrote the law in a way that two of his appointees can veto an investigation or veto a finding of violation. I mean, that's ridiculous. What kind of ethics agency is it where two out of 14 people can veto an investigation?
Well, wait. Stop for a second. This is all very impressive, and as you know, I'm with you. However, I have a question for you, a personal question. You were counsel for Governor Mario Cuomo, a man I knew well, interviewed him on the radio for many, many years.
I listened to all those shows, Mario and me.
And in fact, I had you. Actually, it was me and Mario.
Yeah. But, sorry, Alan.
Yeah, that was a joke, of course, but it was a good joke. So I've had you on the air during those years.
Yes.
Now you got the son of Cuomo, was the son of Black Stallion, son of Cuomo. And, you know, you've just made a very serious accusation about how he's loaded the game. Is that personally disappointing to you?
Well, I think that I am trying to get him to be more active in this area. I know it's hard. And I know that the legislature is a tremendous obstacle to getting these kinds of reforms done. It's an uphill battle. And I know that the governor, Governor Andrew Cuomo, likes to do things where he succeeds, and he has been outstanding succeeding at doing difficult things. We can all name the list of difficult things that he's accomplished. And this is particularly difficult. But I would like to see him take this on. I don't think he has some, you know, inherent moral obstacles to doing or anything like that.
Hey, wait. This guy has raised over $31 million that we know about. It's probably substantially more by now. He talks about the need for campaign reform, but I think he's somewhat hypocritical. I'm sorry. You say you're going to, on the one hand, you tell us that he set up a situation where any two people on one of those commissions can say no investigation. And now you're telling me you're hoping you could succeed in getting him to come around? I find that naive.
Well, Alan, let's think about it. You know, people do things in a political sense that respond to the concerns of the public. And if the public is concerned about corruption, and Andrew Cuomo as governor wants to be a leader of the public, and if the public makes clear its concern, I think he will respond. I've been reading that the Democratic Party nationally has targeted one way to fight Trump and one way to deal with the have a successful midterm election and then a successful 2020 election is to emphasize the issue of corruption. That the guy who came to Washington, supposedly to clean the swamp has actually made the swamp dirtier. So this is Andrew wants to play in this national arena, and I think he should because he's good at getting things done. But if he's going to do that, he's got to get out in front of this corruption issue, out in front of this pay-to-play issue. And will he do it? I don't know. You're quite right that he has been successful at using the current system and raising a lot of money. The number you mentioned is a very big amount of money, but there comes a time when the road to success in the future doesn't lie in simply having the money, and we all know that people can also raise money, you know, in a different way with small donations. You don't have to do it this way. Obama was great at raising money with small donations. Bernie Sanders raised a heck of a lot of money with small donations. You have to change, and you have to go with the times.
I get that part, but I want to go back to the Constitutional Convention for a minute.
Right.
I knew it was going to lose, and I knew it was going to lose because there's a conventional wisdom, not about the labor unions, the mean old labor unions, but because the legislature always ends up running the Constitutional Convention, and the same bums, that's the word I'm using, who are in the legislature would take over, and that's what's happened in the past. So don't give me a hard time about labor unions. I'm telling you, it had more to do with the common sense of the people of New York who said they could, and you're doing it the right way now, by the way, Evan, I think that's correct. They could do it if they wanted to. They could pass any amendment. They could amend the Constitution, and that's what you're trying to do. So there's
I understand that your point, and that's also what Governor Cuomo said, that the legislature would dominate the whole thing. And the legislature totally ran the convention in 1968.
And I was there. I mean, I was around at the time, yeah.
Right. But we had, you know, on our committee a number of people who were there, like Hank was there and Donna Shalhoub was there. And Arthur Levitt was there, and Bill Vanden Heuvel was there. These are all people on our committee. And we were going to run candidates who would be different kind of candidates. One good thing that's come out of Washington and our current administration down there is this whole new group of people running for office. It is really great. We're having these primaries with lots of candidates, and by the way, lots of women candidates. In my city council race here in New York City, in my district, there were 8 people running for city council, all great, you know, wonderful people. And there's just a hunger for involvement that I think is going to continue, with or without a convention. I think it's going to continue. Because now these people are going to run for the legislature. They're going to run for the city council. They're going to run for the county legislature. And so, in a sense, I think the reaction, or what some people call resistance, to President Trump has been helpful. And I just hope it continues. And if we can clean up the system and make it less rigged, then we'll be even better in bringing out this talent and this ability and this energy.
Are you on the subway?
No, I'm sitting in my apartment, but a plane is flying overhead.
Gotcha. Okay, let's change subjects. Eric Schneiderman, let's talk about him for a minute.
Sure.
He's out. There is a replacement campaign going on. I personally, I'm just going to give you my opinion. That's all it is. My opinion is that Preet-Bharara should run and clean up the swamp, so to speak. But there does seem to be a movement towards one particular candidate. What do you think?
So I think if Preet-Bharara ran, he would win.
Me too.
Because the public, this is where I say the public is sick and tired. Enough is enough of corruption. And the one thing you know is that Preet-Bharara wouldn't pull any punches, wouldn't do any political games of making something that seems good, but when you read the details, it's a fake. And he'd win. And that shows where the public
is. But Evan Davis, the very people who you have described, you know, as basically the corruptive influence in both the legislature as it is and the rest, those people are endorsing somebody who will then be beholden to them. Isn't that right?
Well, I do not know the public advocate from New York, Letitia James, who has talked about it. I do not know her well, and I don't feel, you know, able to really comment on her character. But I do think that Preet-Bharara, if she were, there were a primary and Preet was in it and she were in it, Preet would win.
Yeah, me too.
Because the public is sick of it, and we're going to find out what her, if she runs for attorney general, our committee is going to be asking her for her position on making ethics real. Right now it's only on paper because we don't have any enforcement. There's nothing real about it at all, and we'll ask her opinion on making it real, and if she's not for it, we're against her.
So let me ask you a question. Let's go back to Schneiderman for a minute. You know, there have been many accusations from the women who came forward about Schneiderman, in which he said something like, and I can't remember the exact quote, they're saying he said, "I am the law." What do you make of that?
So this is why sexual harassment can be fairly considered an ethics issue, because ethics has to do not only with conflict of interest, but with abuse of power. And you may remember, Alan, I worked on the impeachment inquiry with impeachment of Richard Nixon for the House Judiciary Committee, so I know about abuse of power. And the article of impeachment that got the biggest vote from the committee was the abuse of power, not the obstruction of justice. The abuse of power article got a bigger vote in favor of impeachment. So this is abuse of power to get personal gratification, whether it's money or sex or whatever, a job for your son, by telling people that if you don't do what they want, you're going to pay a consequence because of their political power. And the epitome of this was Nixon's enemies list, where he told the IRS to go after his political enemies, to audit them.
Yep.
So they couldn't take it anymore.
Yep.
And when government does that, it's not just a matter of morality. It's a matter of dangerous. It's dangerous that if you're against somebody, you're going to pay a price because they have political power. So it's in a sexual context, that same kind of thing. And it's a reason why one of the things our amendment would do would be to clearly make sexual harassment a violation of the state code.
Okay. Now, Evan Davis, I only have 7 minutes of your time, so this is going to be a lightning round. I need you to come back real fast. Cynthia Nixon said she would reconvene the Moreland Commission, you know, that the governor can do to fight crime if she's elected governor. A good idea?
It's never bad to have a Moreland Commission because there's plenty to look at. But in terms of ethics reform and making enforcement strong, we don't need a Moreland Commission to do that. And if a Moreland Commission is an excuse to kick the can down the road, that's bad.
On the other hand, if a Moreland Commission comes on and shows that there's severe wrongdoing, it certainly can't help your cause for your ethics recommendations, right?
That is correct. But if we look at the transcripts of these trials, take the Prococo trial, we can find plenty of evidence of play to play.
Absolutely.
And plenty of evidence of feathering your own nest with your political power.
No, I agree with you. Okay.
And we don't need... I mean, it would help. It would help him. But I would like to see people move now and get going on this ethics reform because it's the time is right.
I hear you, but I want to go on. Our friend Blair Horner from NYPIRG came up with a 4-point plan to deal with corruption. One of them was expand the comptroller's role. The son of the guy you worked for and the guy I interviewed every week for all those years has basically taken away from the comptroller his pre-audit function, leading, I think, to much of the mess we're seeing right now. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I agree completely that the comptroller's role needs to be restored and we need to tighten back up the contracting process, so particularly in the economic development area. But there still needs to be, on top of that, this anti-corruption, ethical behavior, people needing to report misconduct and to avoid conflicts of interest. I mean, look at what's going on with the MTA now and the chairman, who has got all these conflicts of interest because he's on all these boards and people who have a stake in what the MTA is doing. And no one's doing anything about it.
Yeah, so but you don't...
On top of that, you need ethical oversight. But I agree completely. The comptroller's role needs to be restored and it needs to be strengthened. And I favor doing a lot to take money out of politics. I mean, they
like
talk
what?
About,
like what? Quickly.
Well, I think it's a positive step, what the Senate Republicans are proposing to take to make it very hard for people who contract with the state to make political contributions.
Yep.
But they're just doing it on the side of contracting. They're not saying a thing about making it hard for those people who are lobbying and hiring expensive lobbyists to come and get them to pass laws to make it hard for them to make political contributions.
Okay, how about the outside, Evan Davis, how about the outside limits on public officials making money like they do in Congress? Shouldn't that happen here?
I think there's no question. It's become that it should. It's become a full-time job to be a legislator. To do a good job, you have to do both constituent service. You have to help your constituents who are trying to navigate the bureaucracy, and you have to be an ombudsman for your constituents or ombudsperson for your constituents. And at the same time, you've got to really know what you're doing in the laws you pass. And, you know, we do not have a legislative system currently that is doing what it should in terms of holding hearings and having public input and having a chance to study the bill before it's passed. You know how it works, Alan. Everything happens at midnight.
But I also
Nobody has a clue what they're doing.
But I also know that you have a group of very good people who you've named already, but who we call in Albany the goo-goos, the people who have the idea of what should be done, but there's a terrible sense of naivete on your part that you're going to get anything done.
Well, you know, it never hurts to try. And this is why I wanted a convention, because a convention would shake things up. You say it would have been controlled by the legislature. I think there would have been enough new voices to shake things up, and a convention could submit proposals directly to the people.
Okay, but that's
so
all behind
us now.
Submit
proposals through the legislature. So it's not going to be easy. But if you can get enough people to worry that they're going to pay a price at the polls for being obstacles, I hate that word goo-goo, but to really reforms, people don't realize how much corruption costs us. When you think of the fact that to build a subway in New York City costs four times as much money as to do the same thing in London or Paris, and that there were 200 no-show jobs in building the Second Avenue subway, think of the cost of that. You can't have no-show jobs without corruption.
But you're going to have to.
Absurd.
But Evan, you're going to have to call out this governor because, you know, you can't say I'm hoping to convince him. He's a participant in the system. Look at Joe Prococo. Look at the guys who are around him. You know, you say to yourself, okay, he's the problem here. He can do anything with this legislature he wants, and he's not doing it. So
I don't think he can do anything with the legislature he wants. Would that were the
well
case?
Gun control?
But I think he has been effective. And I think he can do this, and we're going to make it not only in his interest, but in the interest of everyone running for office to be in favor of these critical needed reforms in corruption and voting. Because if they're against them, the people are going to be against them. And if the people are against them, they're going to lose. And it's not easy, I agree. It's not hard, but it's more than it's been done before. Because the good government groups, Alan, you know, the goo-goo groups, have not gone into the political arena and spent money to defeat candidates.
You know, Evan, that I am basically on your side. I'm just trying.
I know, but from all the years that we've been discussing these things, and I think Mario Cuomo was totally on my side. You know, I worked for him, and he's a hero, obviously.
Well, he is, but he has that son, and he loved that son, and he empowered him. It's of some disappointment to me to see what's going on here. In any case, Evan Davis, we loved having you on the show. Manager of the Committee to Reform the State Constitution. Evan, I'll see you at the movies. Thanks so much for joining us.
Right. Same thing, Alan. Bye-bye.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.